As the Court of Appeals here recognized, Quirin provides a compelling historical precedent for the power of civilian courts to entertain challenges that seek to interrupt the processes of military commissions. The circumstances of this case, like those in Quirin, simply do not implicate the obligations of comity that under appropriate circumstances justify abstention. Finally, the government has identified no other important countervailing interest that would permit federal courts to depart from their general duty to exercise the jurisdiction that is conferred upon them by Congress. To the contrary, Hamdan and the government both have a compelling interest in knowing in advance whether Hamdan may be tried by a military commission that arguably is without any basis in law and operates free from many of the procedural rules prescribed by Congress for courts martial, rules intended to safeguard the accused and ensure the reliability of any conviction. While we certainly do not foreclose the possibility that abstention may be appropriate in some cases seeking review of ongoing military commission proceedings, such as military commissions convened on the battlefield, the foregoing discussion makes clear that under our precedent, abstention is not justified here. We therefore proceed to consider the merits of Hamdan's challenge. Part 4. The military commission, a tribunal neither mentioned in the Constitution nor created by statute, was born of military necessity. Though foreshadowed in some respects by earlier tribunals like the Board of General Officers that General Washington convened to try British Major John Andre for spying during the Revolutionary War, the commission as such was inaugurated in 1847. As commander of occupied Mexican territory and having available to him no other tribunal, General Winfield Scott that year ordered the establishment of both military commissions to try ordinary crimes committed in the occupied territory and a council of war to try offenses against the law of war. When the exigencies of war next gave rise to a need for the use of military commissions during the Civil War, the dual system favored by General Scott was not adopted. Instead, a single tribunal often took jurisdiction over ordinary crimes, war crimes, and breaches of military orders alike. As further discussed below, each aspect of that seemingly broad jurisdiction was in fact supported by a separate military exigency. Generally, though, the need for military commissions during this period, as during the Mexican War, was driven largely by the then very limited jurisdiction of courts martial. The occasion for the military commission arises principally from the fact that the jurisdiction of the court martial proper in our law is restricted by statute almost exclusively to members of the military force and to certain specific offenses defined in a written code. Exigency alone, of course, will not justify the establishment and use of penal tribunals not contemplated by Article 1, Section 8 and Article 3, Section 1 of the Constitution unless some other part of that document authorizes a response to the felt need. And that authority, if it exists, can derive only from the powers jointly granted to the President and Congress in time of war. The Constitution makes the President the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces under Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1, but vests in Congress the powers to declare war and make rules concerning captures on land and water, to raise and support armies, to define and punish offenses against the law of nations, and to make rules for the government and regulation of the land and naval forces. The interplay between these powers was described by Chief Justice Chase in the seminal case of Ex parte Milligan. The power to make the necessary laws is in Congress, the power to execute in the President. Both powers imply many subordinate and auxiliary powers. Each includes all authorities essential to its due exercise. But neither can the President in war more than in peace intrude upon the proper authority of Congress, nor Congress upon the proper authority of the President. Congress cannot direct the conduct of campaigns, nor can the President or any commander under him, without the sanction of Congress, institute tribunals for the trial and punishment of offenses, either of soldiers or civilians, unless in cases of controlling necessity, which justifies what it compels, or at least ensures acts of indemnity from the justice of the legislature. Whether Chief Justice Chase was correct in suggesting that the President may constitutionally convene military commissions without the sanction of Congress in cases of controlling necessity is a question this Court has not answered definitively and need not answer today. For we held in querim that Congress had, through Article of War 15, sanctioned the use of military commissions in such circumstances. By the Articles of War, and especially Article 15, Congress has explicitly provided, so far as it may constitutionally do so, that military tribunals shall have jurisdiction to try offenders or offenses against the law of war in appropriate cases. Article 21 of the UCMJ, the language of which is substantially identical to old Article 15 and was preserved by Congress after World War II, reads as follows. Jurisdiction of courts-martial not exclusive. The provisions of this code conferring jurisdiction upon courts-martial shall not be construed as depriving military commissions, provost courts, or other military tribunals of concurrent jurisdiction in respect of offenders or offenses that by statute or by the law of war may be tried by such military commissions, provost courts, or other military tribunals. We have no occasion to revisit Quirin's controversial characterization of Article of War 15 as congressional authorization for military commissions. Contrary to the government's assertion, however, even Quirin did not view the authorization as a sweeping mandate for the president to invoke military commissions when he deems them necessary. Rather, the Quirin court recognized that Congress had simply preserved what power, under the Constitution and the common law of war, the president had before 1916 to convene military commissions, with the express condition that the president and those under his command comply with the law of war. That much is evidenced by the court's inquiry following its conclusion that Congress had authorized military commissions into whether the law of war had indeed been complied with in that case. The government would have us dispense with the inquiry that the Quirin court undertook and find in either the AUMF or the DTA specific overriding authorization for the very commission that has been convened to try Hamdan. Neither of these congressional acts, however, expands the president's authority to convene military commissions. First, while we assume that the AUMF activated the president's war powers, and that those powers include the authority to convene military commissions in appropriate circumstances, there is nothing in the text or legislative history of the AUMF even hinting that Congress intended to expand or alter the authorization set forth in Article 21 of the UCMJ. Likewise, the DTA cannot be read to authorize this commission. Although the DTA, unlike either Article 21 or the AUMF, was enacted after the president had convened Hamdan's commission, it contains no language authorizing that tribunal or any other at Guantanamo Bay. The DTA obviously recognizes the existence of the Guantanamo Bay commissions in the weakest sense because it references some of the military orders governing them and creates limited judicial review of their final decisions. But the statute also pointedly reserves judgment on whether the Constitution and laws of the United States are applicable in reviewing such decisions and whether, if they are, the standards and procedures used to try Hamdan and other detainees actually violate the Constitution and laws. Together, the UCMJ, the AUMF, and the DTA at most acknowledge a general presidential authority to convene military commissions in circumstances where justified under the Constitution and laws, including the law of war. Absent a more specific congressional authorization, the task of this court is, as it was in Quirin, to decide whether Hamdan's military commission is so justified. It is to that inquiry that we now turn. Part 5. The common law governing military commissions may be gleaned from past experience and what sparse legal precedent exists. Commissions historically have been used in three situations. First, they have substituted for civilian courts at times and in places where martial law has been declared. Their use in these circumstances has raised constitutional questions, but is well recognized. Second, commissions have been established to try civilians as part of a temporary military government over occupied enemy territory or territory regained from an enemy where civilian government cannot and does not function. Illustrative of this second kind of commission is the one that was established with jurisdiction to apply the German Criminal Code in occupied Germany following the end of World War II. The third type of commission convened as an incident to the conduct of war when there is a need to seize and subject to disciplinary measures those enemies who in their attempt to thwart or impede our military effort have violated the law of war have been described as utterly different from the other two. Not only is its jurisdiction limited to offenses cognizable during time of war, but its role is primarily a fact-finding one, to determine, typically on the battlefield itself, whether the defendant has violated the law of war. The last time the U.S. Armed Forces used the Law of War Military Commission was during World War II. In Quirin, this court sanctioned President Roosevelt's use of such a tribunal to try Nazi saboteurs captured on American soil during the war. And in Yamashita, we held that a military commission had jurisdiction to try a Japanese commander for failing to prevent troops under his command from committing atrocities in the Philippines. Quirin is the model the government invokes most frequently to defend the commission convened to try Hamdan. That is both appropriate and unsurprising. Since Guantanamo Bay is neither enemy-occupied territory nor under martial law, the Law of War Commission is the only model available. At the same time, no more robust model of executive power exists. Quirin represents the high watermark of military power to try enemy combatants for war crimes. The classic treatise penned by Colonel William Winthrop, whom we have called the Blackstone of military law, describes at least four preconditions for exercise of jurisdiction by a tribunal of the type convened to try Hamdan. First, a military commission, except where otherwise authorized by statute, can legally assume jurisdiction only of offenses committed within the field of the command of the convening commander. The field of command in these circumstances means the theater of war. Second, the offense charged must have been committed within the period of the war. No jurisdiction exists to try offenses committed either before or after the war. Third, a military commission not established pursuant to martial law or an occupation may try only individuals of the enemy's army who have been guilty of illegitimate warfare or other offenses in violation of the laws of war, and members of one's own army who, in time of war, become chargeable with crimes or offenses not cognizable or triable by the criminal courts or under the Articles of War. Finally, a Law of War Commission has jurisdiction to try only two kinds of offense: violations of the laws and usages of war cognizable by military tribunals only, and breaches of military orders or regulations for which offenders are not legally triable by court-martial under the Articles of War. All parties agree that Colonel Winthrop's treatise accurately describes the common law governing military commissions, and that the jurisdictional limitations he identified were incorporated into Article of War 15 and later Article 21 of the UCMJ. It also is undisputed that Hamdan's commission lacks jurisdiction to try him unless the charge properly sets forth not only the details of the act charged, but the circumstances conferring jurisdiction. The question is whether the preconditions designed to ensure that a military necessity exists to justify the use of this extraordinary tribunal have been satisfied here. The charge against Hamdan, described in detail in Part 1, Supra, alleges a conspiracy extending over a number of years from 1996 to November 2001. All but 2 months of that more than five-year-long period preceded the attacks of September 11, 2001 and the enactment of the AUMF, the Act of Congress on which the government relies for the exercise of its war powers and thus for its authority to convene military commissions. Neither the purported agreement with Osama bin Laden and others to commit war crimes, nor a single overt act, is alleged to have occurred in a theater of war or on any specified date after September 11, 2001. None of the overt acts that Hamdan is alleged to have committed violates the law of war. These facts alone cast doubt on the legality of the charge and hence the commission. As Winthrop makes plain, the offense alleged must have been committed both in a theater of war and during, not before, the relevant conflict. But the deficiencies in the time and place allegations also underscore, and indeed are symptomatic of, the most serious defect of this charge. The offense it alleges is not triable by law of war military commission.